Hi, everybody. I'm Janine, and I'm planning on offering a talk on equanimity tonight. And my first Buddhist lesson on equanimity occurred during a retreat with Eric Kolvig, who sometimes teaches here with FIMC, over 20 years ago. I was struggling to reconcile the behavior of my adult stepson, who, on the one hand, he was trying to relate with me. He had recently read the book Man's Search for Meaning. And if any of you have read that book, it's an incredibly profound and deep exploration into humanity. And I was really moved by the fact that this young man wanted to talk with me about this book. At the same time, he was extremely emotionally and physically abusive with many family members. So I had the session with Eric where we have opportunities to ask the teacher a question. And I wanted Eric to help me to help my stepson understand how hurtful his behavior is. I was just like, what can I do through this practice? How do I help him? How do I help him understand that his behavior doesn't align with any of the lessons and the in this book, Man's Search for Meaning, that he seems to connect so closely with? And Eric had a very simple response. He said, "His karma is his karma." And I was like, oh, because it really helped me realize, oh, I am not responsible for how he acts or how he connects or doesn't connect or what I think he should be getting out of this profound book. His karma is his karma. It was a deep lesson for me in taking a step back. While also staying connected. Because the message wasn't, you need to distance yourself from your stepson. He's troubled. It was nothing like that. There was a compassion involved and just recognizing that he's on his life path. And I needed to kind of take this step back. And this is part of what is involved with equanimity. So equanimity is the practice of developing a state of non-judgment. It's to learn the approach that everything kind of occurs in your life without reaction. Just learning how can we allow life to happen without reacting to it. Without reaction or judgment. This does not mean simply being passive, but simply allowing things to be as they are, accepting them without either approval or disapproval. So in Buddhism, equanimity is an essential component of many of the practices. It's part of the four immeasurables. Some of you might know those as the divine abodes, the seven factors of awakening, the 10 perfections, the four jhanas. Equanimity appears in them all. As I was thinking about this, I was thinking like, wow, equanimity, it just seems so lofty. It seems something like I can never really get to. I might aspire to it, but can I ever really be equanimous in life? Wouldn't I have to be a completely enlightened Buddha to really have profound equanimity? And I realized as I was thinking about this that equanimity is not something we aspire to. It's something that exists within us. It's something that we can uncover and that we can cultivate. So I just leave you with that for a moment. consider the fact that it might not be something that's outside of us that we aspire toward, but how might it be? How might equanimity and those other uplifting facets of our being, loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, be part of us already and something that we uncover, that we feed, that we nurture? As I delved further in Buddhism, I often heard equanimity talked about as courageous love or not getting thrown off balance, or a grandmotherly love. That was another description. And again, I think that aspiration would kind of well up in me, like, I want to be like that. I want to be able to show grandmotherly love to my children who are driving me crazy right now. But I wasn't able to cultivate that grandmotherly love. I was a mother, not a grandmother in that situation. But as I started, you know, continued to like explore equanimity, I thought, what happens when people are really hurtful? Am I supposed to be developing this grandmotherly love, not be thrown off balance, have courageous love in the face of racism? Or is equanimity where I'm able to have balance even when other people's value systems like really collide with mine? So I asked this question of Howard Cohen, a Vipassana teacher, during a retreat, and he said, equanimity is about caring, but not feeling excessively overwhelmed by that which we care about. And that really struck me. But equanimity has this caring component. But when we're attached to what we care about so strongly that we can't see a bigger picture, that's where equanimity can come in. So we can learn how to hold what we care about more loosely, make space around what you care about. It's like a practice of not overly identifying with the caring. So there's this really fine line, because we want to be caring people, right? We're, you know, in Buddhism, we're really practicing care and compassion, connection. But equanimity is about not attaching to whatever is happening, including that which you care about. It's really dwelling in this place of awareness, right? And so when we're having a challenging experience, like anger, really strong anger is coming up, equanimity is about becoming aware of the anger and realizing and connecting with the anger and letting it be. And at the same time, realizing that the awareness of the anger is not angry. And the awareness of the frustration is not frustrated. Equanimity is dwelling in this place of connected awareness. So I'll just share a few personal examples over the past few years. It's heart-wrenching to observe a family member cutting herself off from her parents, caught up in a narrative of how they failed her when she was young, while she neglects them as they're getting older and has no interest in being involved in their lives. I have had a lot of trouble kind of coming to terms with this behavior of a family member. And I've been asking myself, like, what would an equanimous response to this all be? Can I not get tied up in my judgments around this family member who I feel like is deserting her elderly parents. I have a friend who's adopted a set of political principles that are entirely contrary to her previous beliefs, and that I find deeply, deeply troubling because they advocate for bigotry and divisiveness. And I have struggled so hard because this friend is such a dear, dear person to me. And what does it mean to bring equanimity into that friendship and into that situation? Does it mean that I say, you go your way, I go my way? Or is there ways to stay compassionate and connected even in and maintain friendships? This has been a struggle of mine. It's been disheartening to see younger colleagues express frustration and animosity when I have offered my perspective, indicating that my years of institutional knowledge are no longer relevant or useful to them. As I reflect on equanimity amidst these difficult situations, I've come to think of it, this term came to me as I was thinking about this, as the term is dispassionate connection. Dispassionate connection means being able to maintain a sense of connection with others, even in challenging circumstances, without becoming overly attached, judgmental, or reactive to their behavior. It involves recognizing the humanity and dignity of others, even when they are acting in ways that are hurtful or misguided. By cultivating compassionate or dispassionate connection, we can avoid getting swept up in negative emotions and reactions, and instead respond with clarity, compassion, and wisdom. So in Buddhism, I love this way of relating to these lofty ideals. There's an identification of near and far enemies. So the near enemy of equanimity is indifference or callousness. It's the idea that we can remain at peace and we can be serene and we just can feel non-attached. Like we think to ourselves, it doesn't matter anyway, because it's all transitory. So whatever is bothering me really doesn't matter. This is a near enemy of equanimity. This is not what equanimity is. That's based on fear and avoidance, right? Anything we're avoiding, we're afraid of, pretty much. So this is what I consider a spiritual bypass, where we just use our spiritual practice, you know, the rising and the falling away of experience, to say, like, life's transitory, and so none of this really, really matters. But that's indifference, and it's subtle. It's really subtle. That can really come. I've entered into those realms plenty of times. What gets me out of them is there's some sort of intelligence there that tells us when we're numbing out, when we're really not being with what is happening and what is real. The far enemy of equanimity is hatred. We create an other of someone or some situation in order to distance and disconnect. And so that's also based in fear. So I'm going to tell a story now. So this is the story of Hakuin and the pregnant girl. Has anybody heard that story before? Hakuin and the pregnant girl? Anybody on Zoom? Yeah, Sarah. Yeah. All right. The story goes that a young girl in a small village became pregnant and her angry parents demanded to know who was responsible. The girl initially refused to say, but after much pressure, she eventually confessed that the baby's father was Hakuin, the Zen master who lived in a nearby temple. The parents were outraged and stormed to the temple to confront Hakuin. When they arrived, they demanded that Hakuin take responsibility for his actions and care for the baby. Hakuin replied calmly, "Is that so?" And he took the baby in his arms. The parents left, still angry and confused. Several months passed, and Hakuin devoted himself to caring for the baby. He would often take the child with him on his daily begging rounds and tend to its needs through the day and night. Meanwhile, the villagers began to soften in their attitude toward Hakuin, admiring his compassion and dedication to the child. Eventually, the girl confessed to her parents that Hakuin was not the father of the child, and the parents were filled with remorse and guilt for their earlier accusations. They went to Hakuin to apologize and to take the baby back, but Hakuin simply replied, "Is that so?" and returned the child to them. So this parable is designed to illustrate, you know, the example of a mastery of equanimity. And when I first heard the story, I was really angry toward that girl's parents. And I couldn't imagine responding as Hakuin did with such cool compassion and wisdom after he was being treated so hurtfully. But I sat with the story and I saw that Hakuin's equanimity was filled with love and grace. Like, what if he had struggled to keep the baby or reacted with anger or defensiveness? Just consider like the alternative. It's like he would have created a lot of pain and suffering. And that child would have experienced a lot of pain and suffering. So he expressed a dispassionate connection. Is that so? That's equanimity. It's like he cared about the baby so much that he wasn't going to create antagonism and pain and grasping this child. Or in the first case, pushing the child away. Either way, he would have created pain and suffering for this child. So he did what he did out of a deep care and connection, and this pulling back, that there's a bigger picture involved, and having this like bigger perspective. This to me is an incredible example of equanimity. And so sometimes the best that we can do is love from a distance. And that's some of what I've tried to apply with some of the difficult circumstances that I found myself challenged by, where I felt hurt by the behaviors of different people. But this connection wasn't the answer. The answer for me has been pulling back, but loving. And not loving despite how somebody acts, but recognizing that there are all kinds of circumstances that I do not understand, and just loving sometimes from a distance and allowing for life to unfold. I'm very close friends with the person whose belief systems I find really offensive, and we are still dear to each other's hearts. And that's been a process. It can take time. What does equanimity look like when the family member who has abandoned her aging parents, or the dear friend who has abandoned the values that we once so cherished together? We can have empathy and compassion for their suffering and for their views, even if they are hurtful, or not the version of reality that I see. Try to understand where they're coming from. I try to understand where are they coming from so I can connect with them and understand them better. It's so important that we love one another. But loving one another does not mean agreeing with them or even liking what they do or what they think. Loving someone means seeing them through the lens of compassionate insight, to love them, not despite their flaws, and not loving what they think or what they do, but loving them for who they are at their core. And at the same time, we can also have compassion for ourselves, for feeling hurt, for feeling like someone abandoned you, betrayed you, hurt you in some way. Not feeling like we have to push away those feelings to rise above them somehow. That's not what equanimity is. Equanimity is really staying with them, staying with the experiences within yourself, connecting, dispassionate connection. It's this connecting with ourselves, but having also a little bit of distance from it, a wider perspective. This too shall pass. Or in the case of my colleagues, treating them with kindness and respect, realizing it's their turn to create what they want. It's their turn to learn from their experiences, learning how to not save them based on my own experiences. Our lives are our teaching. How we live and love plants seeds. And we can watch them grow without attachment to results. That's the part, that's this distancing, this connection with a larger view, without attachment to results, including not being attached to being equanimous. Just like, okay, it's not an ideal. It's something that lives within us. Can we cultivate it? What does that look like? So I want to conclude with a little story that recently happened. Like literally, as I was planning this Dharma talk, I received a call from my husband who, in a kind of panicky voice, and he is not one to panic, he's pretty calm and collected person, he started explaining that the car was broken into while he was birding with his son, with our son, and the car was broken into, the window was shattered, and he's quite upset. But I had been writing a Dharma talk about equanimity. So I was able to kind of be pretty calm during this and just, you know, remind him of like the steps he needed to take and what he needed to, well, one thing at a time, and everything would be okay. So I was pretty equanimous with this news. When he arrived home, he taught me more about equanimity. So it had turned out that he thought his wallet had been stolen, but he realized while he was on the phone with me, he was realizing, wait, I took the wallet with me, but I don't have it anymore. And it turned out that the wallet had fallen out of his pocket onto the ground. And if the car hadn't been broken into, he would never have gone back to the car looking around and seen that his wallet was on the ground. He wouldn't have done that. And so it turned out that his wallet was right on the ground, that the person who stole from the car, broke into the car, didn't see that the wallet was right on the ground, right next to the car. So he was, you know, appreciating that he didn't have to go through that process. Well, it turned out that there was nothing of value in the car. And so the person who stole from the car just got a old backpack with nothing in it. And my husband's attitude kind of was to put everything even into a larger perspective, that he realized that the person who broke into the car was really desperate, and that it must be very hard to live the type of life that led this person to break into the car and to steal from the car. And so he was reflecting on how, you know, he had a moment of discombobulation, a moment of frustration. You know, there's going to be some costs involved to fixing the car. But in the big picture, he was birding with his son, our 14-year-old son, having an incredible connection with our son. And this took a moment out of their lives, while the person who did this was clearly suffering in some way. And so after he presented in that manner, a tinge of sorrow overcame me that this individual had not received anything of worth. There was nothing that he could really convert into cash. And that, you know, that was a sort of sad circumstance in which, you know, a couple of lives collided there. And just the recognition with equanimity is like this deep recognition of like taking that step back, having that larger perspective, that larger view, but staying connected. You know, it's a step back and there's a deep connection. There's a deep recognition, in the case with my husband, a deep recognition of suffering of another human being. So I'd like to end this talk with a guided meditation on equanimity. And so I invite you to close your eyes, connect with your breath, choose a challenging situation. Start by choosing a situation in your life that you find challenging. It could be a difficult conversation with a friend or coworker, a stressful work project, or a personal struggle you're going through. Take a moment to bring a situation into your mind. Take a few moments to observe your thoughts and emotions related to the situation. Notice any feelings of stress, anxiety, or discomfort that arise. Acknowledge these feelings without judgment and try to approach them with a sense of curiosity and openness. As you continue to observe your thoughts and emotions, begin to cultivate a sense of equanimity. This may involve reminding yourself that all experiences are impermanent, and that this challenging situation, like all situations, will eventually pass. You may also try to cultivate a sense of empathy and understanding for others involved in the situation, recognizing that they too may be struggling in their own way. See if you can create some space around your experience. If you're feeling angry, recognizing that the awareness of anger is not angry. The awareness of frustration is not frustrated. Try some of these phrases. May I accept things as they are? May I remain balanced and even-minded in the face of all experiences, whether pleasant or unpleasant. Pleasure and pain arise and pass away. May my heart be open and big enough to hold the joys and sorrows without being overwhelmed. May I open to the conditions of my life with equanimity. May I open to the conditions of my body and mind with grace. May I be balanced and at peace. Remember to take care of yourself throughout this practice. Take deep breaths, stretch your body, or engage in other self-care practices that help you feel centered and grounded. After practicing equanimity on a challenging situation, take a few moments to reflect on your experience. Notice any changes in your thoughts and emotions, and observe how your mindset has shifted or not. Recognize any ways that equanimity has been cultivated, even in the littlest way, and try to carry whatever sense of peace and dispassionate connection you can into other areas of your life.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.